We begin this evening with our discussion of the Haftorah for Parshas Shlach. And of course, much as the Parsha speaks a great deal about the story of the Meraglim in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Haftorah as well, which is taken from Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Beis, describing an episode that occurred shortly after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Meraglim sent by Yehoshua, the clear connection between the two episodes. And it is important for us to first and foremost perhaps examine what the differences between the two episodes might have been. After all, one would expect that after the tragedy of Moshe Rabbeinu's Meraglim, which resulted in 40 years in the desert, an entire generation dying out, one would have expected that Yehoshua would have done everything possible to avoid a repeat of such a disastrous catastrophe. And therefore, the question that obviously jumps out at us at the very outset is, what was Yehoshua thinking? Is he looking to repeat the exact same errors, the exact same mistakes that Moshe Rabbeinu made with his miraculum? How could Yeshua do what Moshe Rabbeinu did, and knowing the terrible consequences of such an attempt? So let's first begin with an overview of the Haftorah, just a quick overview. The Haftorah is Perek Beis of Sefer Yeshua. The brief overview is that we first read of Yeshua sending his spies into Eretz Canaan. We read of the Melech Yericho, the king of Yericho, discovering the arrival of these spies and sending messengers to Rachav Hazona, where the spies had sought to stay for the night, informing her that these are spies and hand them over. Rachav, instead of doing as ordered by the king of Yericho at tremendous risk to her own life, instead immediately hides the spies that Yeshua sent and then tells the messengers of the king misleadingly that, yes, you're correct, they came to my inn, they came to my home, but they just left. Quickly chase after them. You will succeed in finding them and reaching them. And what is clear from the psukim is that she tells the messengers of the king that they fled, run after them, you'll find them. She says, I don't know where they went. And the messengers of the king, the Pasuk tells us, presumed, and understandably so, that these Meraglim, if they had fled, where were they most likely to flee to? Most likely to flee back toward the Yarden, back to where they came from. And so the Pasuk describes how these soldiers of the king pursued them toward the Yarden, toward the crossing over the Yarden River, meaning they went from Yericho eastward, back towards Eber HaYarden, presumed that's where the Meraglim had fled back to. And what Rachav did was that she told the Meraglim to flee toward the mountains, the Har Yehuda, to the mountains of Yehuda, meaning she sent them westward from Yericho, more inland, which was a very counterintuitive thing for them to do. You would think that they'd be exposed themselves to even more danger by fleeing further inland. But she knew precisely what she was doing, because she was sending them in the opposite direction of the king's search party. She told them, hide out for 3 days until the searchers return, once they've failed to find you, and then you can very quietly then go on your way. But in addition to caring for the safety of the spies, she makes a pact with them, makes them swear that they will spare her and her family. And the spies themselves add a stipulation that they will only protect and bear responsibility for those members of her family who remain within her home the entire time. But if anybody should leave the house, they tell her, then that is not our responsibility. We are not responsible for their safety. And the spies then return and report back to Yeshua. That is, in a nutshell, the overview of Perek Beis, the Haftorah of Parshas Shlach. Now, if we look a little bit more carefully and try to assess what exactly was it that distinguished Moshe's Meraglim from Yehoshua's Meraglim, And that perhaps would allow us to answer, how could Yeshua do something which would on the surface of it seem to be so, so risky and so, so almost foolish, you would think, given what we know about what happened to Moshe's Meraglim. And the suggestion made by Rav Yisachar Yaakovson in his Sefer, Chazon HaMikra, and others, is that when you look at the Pesukim very carefully, you will see that Moshe's Meraglim were sent with the urging of the entire nation. Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Devarim, in describing and recapping what happened, Moshe there describes how you, referring to Klal Yisrael, all approached me, and you said, let us send spies to scout out Eretz Canaan. So it was very clear from Moshe Rabbeinu's description in Parshas Devarim how this was an initiative taken upon Klal Yisrael by the nation as a whole. They were all interested. The pasuk says, Vatikravun, Eli Kulchem. That's in Devarim, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chav Beis. You all approached me, says Moshe Rabbeinu. Vatomru, you said, Nishlacha Nashim Lefanenu, let's send men ahead of us, the Yachbru Lanus Arts, to spy out the land, the Yoshiva Osanu Dabar, and return word back to us. So whereas the spies of Moshe Rabbeinu were sent at the initiative of all of Klal Yisrael, and that is why, in fact, when they returned, the Pasuk says in Parsha Shlach, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Chavav, Vayavo, El Moshe, Val Aaron, Ve'el Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael. They reported back to all of Klal Yisrael. This was a national effort, if you will. Yeshua's spies were very, very different, because the Haftarah begins, Vayishlach Yehoshua ben Nun min Hashitim, Shnayim Anoshim Miraglim Cheresh Lemor. It was Yeshua alone who sent these spies, and he did so secretly. Presumably, even Klal Yisrael might not have even known about the mission that these spies were being sent on. And that is why, as well, when they returned in our Haftarah, the very end of the parak, Pasuk Chav Gimel tells us, Vayavo El Yehoshua Ben Nun, Vayisapru Lo. They came to Yeshua Ben Nun and they spoke to him. This was a very quiet, quiet undertaking. It was spies sent by Yeshua. They reported back to Yeshua, and that was it. Just two of them. Cheresh Lemor, very quietly. Whereas by Moshe Rabbeinu, it was all of Klal Yisrael were in on it. They pushed for it. The spies returned to all of Klal Yisrael. And it wasn't just two spies, it was 12 spies. We know their names. Know the difference. In the Haftarah, there's no mention of who these spies were. Chazal tell us it was Kalev, it was Pinchas, but there's no mention in the Pesukim who these spies were, because it's almost as if they were anonymous. They were so quietly sent by Yeshua alone. Whereas in Parsha Shlach, we know exactly who they are, not just by name, but they're prominent people. They're the Nesiim of their respective Shvatim. And every Shevet was in on it. Every Shevet had their own representative. And very, very different than what happened here in the Haftarah in Sefer Yehoshua. In fact, the Malbim adds, well, the Malbim actually came before, but Malbim says the following point. He says that the Meraglim sent in Parsha Shlach, Shlach Lecha Anashim V'yosuru Es Eretz Canaan. V'yosuru. What does that term V'yosuru imply? Asks the Malbim. And he suggests that the mission of the Meraglim in Parsha Shlach, as reflected by that word V'yosuru, and in fact, when they return, the pasuk also says in the parsha, "Vayoshuvu mitur haaretz." That verb, "Vayosuru mitur haaretz," reflects that their mission. And again, the third time, "Vayalu vayosuru es haaretz." That verb, "Vayosuru mitur haaretz," or "Vayosuru," that verb suggests, the Malbim implies, that their goal was to assess the advantages, disadvantages, pluses and minuses, the good and the bad. In other words, is this really worthwhile? Is this something we want for ourselves? They were looking to confirm or to disconfirm. Is this something we want to do? And that's why, says the Malbim, every Shevet sent their own representative. Because if you're looking to assess, is this worthwhile? Is this in our best interests? Well, every shevet has their own best interests. So every shevet needs their own man on the inside. I need my representative, you need yours. Every shevet has their own person looking out for their own good. So yeah, 12 meraglim, 12 nesiim, 12 shvatim. Why? Because every shevet needed their own interests looked after. They want their man on the inside to assess, is this in our best interests? I guess lahavdil, you know, a governor or a, you know, is responsible for the state, or the senator, better, of each state. The senator of each state looks after the interests of his people, of his constituents in the Senate. So here too, every shevet had their meraglim, they had their own individual representative looking after their own personal interests. It was a very different type of undertaking, says the Malbim. Mashen Ken Yeshua, he wasn't sending meraglim to assess, is this worthwhile, is it not worthwhile? He was sending out meraglim simply to check for their vulnerabilities, to look where we can get them, how we can get them. Not to question if yes, if no, but to, the Malbim suggests, to find out the best way to go about it. That's why he says you don't need a representative for every shevet. You have two people, military strategists, those who know how to win a war, win a battle. That's who they needed. That's all they needed. Nothing more than that. That's the Malbim's additional ha'aras to the critical difference between the meraglim of Moshe Rabbeinu and the meraglim of Yeshua. And furthermore, and this also is raised by Yitzchak Yaakovson, when one looks in the Radak and in the Ralbag, you also get a sense that the objective of the meraglim of Yeshua was very different than the objective of the meraglim of Moshe Rabbeinu. Because the Radak writes in the beginning of the Perek Beis in Yeshua, that why did the Pasuk stress that Yeshua sent them Cheresh Lemor? It's that we already mentioned. Radak writes that Yeshua did not want Klal Yisrael to know about this mission at all. Rather, says Radak, Yeshua sent them for one reason only. And he writes, Sheyada Sheyatzlichu Bishlichusam, he knew the Meraglim would succeed, V'yarchivu Lev Yisrael Bibisoros Tovos. He wanted them to come back with what he was sure was going to be a good report, and therefore just to add chizik to Klal Yisrael. That was the goal here. It was to give them chizik. It wasn't to question if yes, if no. It was to give them added encouragement and reassurance before the battle's begun in earnest. And the Ralbag as well writes the same idea. The Ralbag says, Shelo hayasholcham rak lechazek, Shelo hayashelucham rak lechazek lev Yehoshua v'ha'am. Their entire objective was to be mechazek Yehoshua and Klal Yisrael. How so? Because when they would hear that nafla emas Yisrael aleihem, when they would hear v'chinam ma'ugu kol Yehoshua v'ha'as v'p'neihem, they'd hear Rachav speaking to these meraglim and describing the fear, the dread, the terror that these Canaanites were living with, that would give chizik to Klal Yisrael. That was the goal of these meraglim, says the Ralbag, along the lines of the Radak, and also a very, very different objective than the meraglim that Moshe sent. And that's reflected in the Pesukim also. Look in the Parshas HaShavua, when Moshe gives instructions to the meraglim, what does he tell them? Uriyisim es aretz mahi, vesa'am hachazaku harafa, hama'atu imrav. Umoha aretz, hatova imra'a. Umoha erim, habamachanim imimifzarim. Umoha aretz, hashmena imraza. The goal of the miracle of Moshe Rabbeinu was to assess good or bad, good or bad. Fortified, unfortified, strong, weak. That wasn't the goal of the miracle of Yeshua. Their goal was bring back chizuk. Tell the Jews how terrified the inhabitants are. They weren't looking to assess if yes, if no, but rather just to find their vulnerabilities and bring back good reports to the mechazek Klal Yisrael. That's a very, very important distinction between the miraglim of Yehoshua and the miraglim of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, let's just look for a moment at some of the pesukim here in Sefer Yehoshua. A few pesukim to look at. The pesukim tell us here that Yeshua sends these two men, spies, very quietly. He tells them, scout out the land and Yericho, and they come to the home of an Isha Zona. Now, Zona, we know from the Mefarshim, can mean one of two things. It can mean a prostitute, or it can mean that she was an innkeeper who provided people with mizonos, with food. And Rashi adopts the second approach, that Rachab Azonamin, she was an innkeeper who fed her guests, her innocent occupation. However, others disagree. And the Radak, for example, writes that no, that based on Targum Yonasan, he argues it actually means a zona, a prostitute, not an innkeeper. And there might be, interestingly enough, reason why, if that were the case, somewhat shocking then, that the Meraglim would camp out in the home of such a woman of ill repute, how could that be? In other words, if you adopt the approach that she was an innkeeper, okay, it makes sense that that's where they would have a place to stay. But if you adopt the approach that she was an actual zona, in the more illicit sense of the word, then why would they go to her of all places? So the Malbim suggests, well, maybe they did so because, interesting suggestion, the non-Jewish nations of the world knew that the Jewish people, their God hated incest. After all, they only knew what happened with Moab and Baal Peor and the Benos Moab. So maybe they thought this would throw off the pursuers from their trail. It would be a way of avoiding detection, perhaps. But then the Malbim writes the following. He says, much more practical, that they figured if there's one person in town who speaks to all the people who have connections and who have information to share, there's one person with the most connections to the most highly placed individuals in town, it's going to be such a woman. So they figured they go to her in her home. That's where they can get the latest news, the latest inside information from someone who would be in the know. That's the Malbim's second suggestion. And therefore, they chose to go to the base Isha Zona Ushma Rachav, and that's where they stayed the night, by Yishkivu Shama. Now, the Radak notes that they didn't stay that long. Reading the Pesukim, Radak says, they came that night, they left that night. It'll happen very quickly. They came that night, the king immediately heard that they had arrived, sent a messenger to Rachav saying, hand them over. She immediately hides them, misleads the king's party on a different way, and then sends them off into the mountains. So they came to her home that night and left that night. It was very, very quick turnaround, says the Radak. But another remarkable lesson to be drawn from this story, Mishav Gamliel Benavitz notes as well, one looks in the Gemara in Meseches Megillah, Daf Yudalad Mabez, and the Gemara there says something remarkable. The Gemara says that Rachav Hazona, not only did she survive because of this pact that she made with the spies of Yeshua, save my life, save my family's life, but furthermore, says the Gemara Megillah, she converted, she became a Gioris. Not just that, but she married Yehoshua ben Nun, of all people. She married the greatest Jew in the world, the leader of Klal Yisrael, Yehoshua ben Nun. Not only did she marry Yehoshua ben Nun, says the Gemara Megillah, Tafidalat Mbeis, but she was Zocha to have descended from her 8 different Nevi'im, who were Kohanim as well. So remarkable line of distinguished descendants that came from this woman who was, again, according to Radak's understanding, nothing more than a lowly zona at the outset. Now, it would have been remarkable enough had Yeshua married any Gioris from Canaan, but to consider the fact that the Manhigan Shal Yisrael, the Melech of Yisrael, the Navi of Yisrael, Yeshua ben Nun himself, married not just a woman who was a Gioris, but married a woman whose career had been in znus of all occupations for his wife to have occupied. It's a pretty stunning story of the turnaround of one person's life, which Rav Gamliel writes is simply an indication of the power of tshuva and what Rachav was able to accomplish with that power of teshuva. And in fact, Rashi tells us that when the Pasuk describes in the Haftarah that she enabled the Meraglim to escape. How so? So the Pasuk says she lowered them down from her window with a rope. Batoridem b'chevel ba'arachalon. In Pasuk Tesvav. She lowers them down from her window with a rope. And Rashi there says that it was the very same rope and the very same window which her customers, her less than reputable clientele, would utilize to secretly enter her home. off to the side, a rope from the window. That was how they entered and exited her home. And she bedafka utilized that same means of exit for these meraglim. Why? Says Rashi, she was essentially saying to the Ribono Shel Olam, Amra, she said, Ribono Shel Olam, Be'elu chatasi, Be'elu timcholi. I sinned with this rope from this window. I'm going to use this rope and window now in an act of a great Mesiras Nefesh, putting her own life in terrible danger to save the agents of Klal Yisrael. And that for her was a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Allow this to be this Mesiras Nefesh, in essence, should be this chus that enables you to accept my tshuva. That was how she turned her life around, davened for kapara, by being Moser Nefesh, and more so than just that, but by using the very tools of her sinful trade to perform this tremendous chesed of Mesiras Nefesh. So that, number one, is one very beautiful message, the koach of tshuva, and how even that which was used in a life of sinfulness could then be transformed and used to perform the greatest chesed of Mesiras Nefesh. But equally remarkable is the following chazal that Rav Pam Zatzal pointed out. And this now takes us from the story here in Sefer Yoshua to a story in Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamed Ches. Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamed Ches, it is there that we are told how in the period of time preceding the Churban Bayis Rishon, when Tzidkiyahu was the last Melech Yisrael, before he was ultimately taken prisoner by Nebuchadnezzar Melech Babel, Yirmiyahu was giving warning to Klal Yisrael, and he was saying over Nevuos that the Jews were not too fond of. He was telling the Jews of Yerushalayim that those of you who stay will be killed or will die, those who go to the Babylonians will survive, because the Babylonians are going to come and conquer the city. And there were ministers of the king's palace who found it to be very, very, not just disturbing and upsetting, but demoralizing. And they were infuriated that Yirmiyahu was giving these pessimistic nevuos over to the Jews of Yerushalayim. And they actually succeeded in having Yirmiyahu placed into the bottom of a very deep pit, which at the bottom of it there was, Pasuk speaks of tit, this, I'm not sure if it's quicksand or it's mud, that was just very difficult to extricate him from. And Pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, they took Yirmiyahu, they threw him into that bore, into that pit. They lowered him down by way of ropes. And then the Pasuk describes that there was an individual referred to as Eved Melech, the servant of the king. Chazal identify him as one of those descendants of Rachav, actually, who came to the king's palace, took rags, worn out garments, what's referred to in the Pasuk as Beluye Schavos, Beluye Melochim. He then lowers those rags down to Yirmiyahu in the pits. And this Eved Melech says to Yirmiyahu, put those rags under your armpits, and then put the rope that I'm lowering down under your armpits so that it shouldn't hurt you in the process, and I'm going to raise you up. Which he did. He tugged and pulled, the Pasuk says, and he extricated Yirmiyahu from the pit in that manner. Yirmiyahu had those rags under his armpits, and the rope was then put under the rags, and that's how he was schlepped up from the pit. So if Palm points us to a fascinating Yalkut Shimoni, there on that pasuk in Yirmiyahu, in Perek Lamed Ches, discussing that episode in Yirmiyahu. And the Yalkut Shimoni says the following. The Yalkut Shimoni says that as the Eved Melech lowered the rope down to Yirmiyahu, so he tells Yirmiyahu, put the rope under your armpits. He then pulls Yirmiyahu out of the pit. And as he was doing so, the Yalkut Shimoni says, Omar Yirmiyahu, Yirmiyahu said, Halavai hayali chadasulam. If only I had a ladder. This is painful. This is unpleasant. This is just not an easy process of rescue here. Halavai hayali chadasulam. If only I had a ladder to climb out. They could have lowered a rope ladder down, perhaps, or some other form of easier form of extricating me from the pit. And then the Yalkut says, Omle HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yirmiyahu, Sulam, Atah mevakesh. You're asking for a ladder. Mazik noscha vatoridem bachevel. Just like your great, 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 great grandmother, meaning Rachav. She lowered the meraglim down from her window. How so? By a rope. Af ata kein. You too. That's how you'll be rescued as well. By a rope. Therefore, the pasuk says, "Vayimshachu asyemiyo b'chavalim," which means, Rav Pam says, that perhaps there was some midah k'neged midah here. Rachav Hazona saved the lives of these meraglim. So her great, 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 whatever grandson, Yirmiyo, his life was also saved from the pit where he would have starved to death or died of thirst. And yet at the same time, despite the fact that it was this zechus of Rachav that ensured the rescue of Yirmiyo, but the chesed that Rachav performed, as great as it was, with all the mesiras nefesh and grave danger to her life that it entailed, that Mesiras Nefesh, that Chesed, was lacking just a little bit. It was a little incomplete. It was not done in the best way possible. Now, hard to imagine how you could have any complaints against a woman who was literally risking her life to save two Jews who ended up in her home that night. But there's a Musar message here, that when doing a Chesed, there's one way to do it and another way to do it. One can do a chesed, and one can adopt the attitude of saying, I'm putting my life on the line, literally. I'm risking my life to help these people. I'm doing far more than I'm expected to do, required to do, than anyone else would do. Whatever I do is good enough, and they'll appreciate it. And they certainly will, and they certainly did. Or you can adopt the attitude of, perhaps you might say, hidr mitzvah, so to speak. I'm doing a tremendous chesed, tremendous act of mesiras nefesh. Let's do it the best way possible. Let's make it perfect. Let's make that diamond shine and put everything I have into it to do it to the nth degree. Is it necessary? No. But is it an appreciated hidra of the mitzvah? Certainly. And what the Chazal telling us here is that the extent to which one performs his mitzvah with the added hidra mitzvah that comes along with it, if you really invest it in it, you're all, to that extent, the schar, midah k'neged midah, will reflect that as well. If you do a bare-bones act of chesed, as great as it is, you'll get a bare-bones act of schar to repay you. If you do a glowing, shining act of chesed with all the hidurim attacked onto it, to make it as perfect as it can be, to make it shine, so to speak, then the schar also will be in style. The schar also will be midah k'neged midah, as great as it can be. It brings to mind the famous Maamar Chazal, that when Moshe Rabbeinu welcomed in the Orchim on the third day after his bris milah, Parshas Vayera. And what did he say? Yukach na ma'at mayim. He asked for water to be brought for the guests through a shliach. He didn't run to do it himself. He had someone else provide the water for them. And despite the fact that Avraham Avinu was suffering from his bris milah, he was old, he was ill, he was weak, he was hot, he was tired, and he was doing a tremendous act of chesed, waiting out in the blazing hot burning sun, just looking for guests, looking for guests. But Chazal, Sechas Bav Metzia, gently, subtly criticized Avraham Avinu. And Rashi quotes it in Parshas Vayera. Yukach na ayideh shliach. You're looking to perform this act of chesed by having someone else do it for you? So too HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll repay your sons for this zuchus. Also, al yidei shliach. When the Klal Yisrael in the desert were looking for water, so vayarem Moshe es yado vayach es hasela. The water was given to them through a shliach. And Bala Musa pointed out that what was the effect and consequence of the water being given to Klal Yisrael through a shliach, through Moshe hitting the rock, instead of a Kadosh Baruch Hu giving it to them directly? Well, as we know, the reaction, the response, the consequences were that Moshe hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. He ended up being barred from Eretz Yisrael, which had far-reaching ramifications, because if Moshe had entered Eretz Yisrael, the Gula would have happened immediately. We wouldn't have had a Churban Bayis Rishon and Churban Bayis Sheni. Because Moshe didn't enter Eretz Yisrael, we ended up with the Churban Bayis Rishon and Churban Bayis Sheni. Why didn't he enter Eretz Yisrael? Because he got angry. Shimon Hamorim, he hit the rock. He struck the rock. He didn't speak to the rock. And that was all because the Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't give the water directly to Klal Yisrael, but the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave them through shliachos, through Moshe Rabbeinu. Why was that? Because Avram gave the guests water through shliach, not himself. So again, in a subtle sense, you see how Chazal are so medactic in the manner in which a great Jew, a great tzaddik, performs an act of chesed. It can be the most selfless act of chesed. Avram Avinu, hot, blazing hot day, sick, not feeling well, desperate for guests for the chesed. But the chesed was performed with a slight mashu of a, it could have been done better, of an imperfection. So the great schar that his children were rewarded with was also slight, less than perfect. And that resulted in ramifications that were far less than perfect. So again, the Musar here, if Palm points out, beautiful Musar, how when doing a chesed, do it behidr, do it to the extent that you can. Do it as best as possible, because that will be reflected in the schar that one receives for it as well. Just another couple of quick ha'aras on the haftarah before we conclude. The Navi tells us, we described very briefly how when Rachav tells the Meraglim to head out towards the mountains and she asks them to perform a chesed with her to spare her life, her father, her mother, her brothers, her sisters, and whatever they have. So in the process of her speaking to the Meraglim, she says to them, I know that God has given the land because nafla emaschem aleinu b'china mogu kol yoshtriyaz mepneichem. We are all in fear, in awe of you, and terrified of what will happen to us. Why? So she begins by saying, because we heard how God dried up the waters of Yamsuf in front of you when you left Egypt, and what he did to the two kings of the Amori across the Yarden, Sihon and Og, how you destroyed them. So had she said, we heard what you did to Sihon and Og, I would have understood. That was recent events. That just happened not too long earlier. But she's referring first and foremost to the Yamsuf. That happened 40 years ago, says Agum Rabinovitz. Remarkable, he says, how that event made such an impact that they were still living in fear and in awe because of that one miraculous event from 40 years earlier. Imagine, you know, the awe and inspiration that came about as a result of the Six-Day War, just as a mashal. You know, 40 years later, 2007, people have lost the awesomeness of it to a certain extent. Yeah, you read about it, you try to remember it and recollect and recreate, but the awe, the joy, the emotion, the raw emotion is just not the same as it used to be. And yet here, 40 years after the fact, she's saying that this is why we are in awe and dread and fear, terrified of you and what you might do to us. No one has any fighting spirits anymore. So remarkable how that has such an incredible impact and effect on the Umas Olam living in Eretz Canaan. At the same time, says Rav Gamliel, nonetheless, and here also is a Musar, nonetheless, if they were so awed by this, you would expect that, okay, so then surrender. Meaning the same way Rachav was able to be Megayer and join Klal Yisrael, and Tosis and Mesechta Sota, Taflam Hey says it's because, although once the war began, it was too late. At that point, they had a mitzvah, Klal Yisrael, to destroy every living soul of the Zion Umos in Eretz Canaan. But Tosis writes there that Rachav was able to be Megayer and to marry Yoshua, no less, because before Bnei Yisrael crossed the Yarden, before they started the war with the nations of Canaan, they offered everyone there, whoever wants to make peace, make peace. They had an opportunity to give, to surrender, make peace, and they wouldn't have died. And yet, despite the fact that that offer was on the table, despite the fact that they were so in awe and frightened of Klal Yisrael, they still couldn't bring themselves to say, we surrender, we'll make peace. They would rather fight to the death for the sake of a lifestyle that they knew was coming to an end and that was corrupt. They saw God was the one true God of the universe based on the Kriyas Yamsuf miracles they had heard of. They still couldn't bring themselves to change. So perhaps this parak is, again, first and foremost, the story of the Meraglim. But a underlying theme here is the contrast between Rachav versus the others in Yericho and beyond, and how they each reacted to this incredible report of the Nisan that Kadosh Baruch Hu performed for Klal Yisrael, Nemog Koyoshvei Haaretz. Rachav turned her life around, Tshuva, Megayer, married Yeshua, the great-great-great-grandmother of Nevi'im and Kohanim, and the rest of them simply couldn't bring themselves to change their lifestyle and ultimately ended up paying the ultimate price. So again, a remarkable mussar in that as well. Okay, we'll conclude here. And